Welcome to Torah Temecha Parsha. My name is Chana Meir, and today we'll be learning Parshat Lech Lecha. This Parsha has 126 psukim. It is 5 prakim long, from Perek Yud Bet to Yud Zayin. So let's first go through a brief summary of the 7 aliyahs, and then let's look at one idea in a bit more depth. In the first aliyah, we have our iconic pasuk, Lech Lecha Me'artzecha U'mimoladetcha. Hashem tells Avram to leave his land, his birthplace, his father's house, to go to a land he will show him and promises to make him into a great nation. So Avram takes his wife, Sarah, Lot, all their possessions, and they travel to the land of Canaan. Once they get to Canaan, Hashem reveals that this is the land that he will give them to inherit. They travel the length of Canaan, and then there's a terrible famine which forces them to go to Egypt. Just before they go to Egypt, Avram warns Sarah that she's a very beautiful woman, and he is worried that the Egyptians will kill him in order to kidnap her. So they make a plan where Avram's going to pose as her brother. In the second aliyah, as they enter the land of Egypt, Sarah is taken forcibly to the king, and Avram is showered with gifts. Sarah reveals to the king that she is a married woman, and the king is afflicted with a plague because he took Sarah. Paro summons Avram, tells him off for being dishonest, gives back Sarah and sends them out of Egypt, and they return back safely to the land of Israel. In the third aliyah, Lot is now very wealthy, and his shepherds and Avram's shepherds get into arguments. They decide to separate, and Lot settles in the land of Sodom, where the people are very wicked. After Lot separates from Avram, Hashem appears to Avram and tells him to look north, south, east, west, all that land Hashem will give his descendants. And his descendants will be as many as the dust of the earth. In the fourth aliyah, there is a battle between the 4 powerful rulers of Mesopotamia against the 5 small chieftains of the land of Sodom. The 2 kings of Sodom and Amorah fall into a lime pit. The rest of the kings hide in the mountains, and the people are taken captive. Their property is stolen, and all their food is taken. Avram is informed about this, and so he runs to the defense of Lot. He takes with him Eliezer and the people of his house, and he successfully rescues Lot and all the people. In the fifth aliyah, the king of Sodom and the king of Yerushalayim come out to meet Avram. The king of Yerushalayim gives him bread and wine. The king of Sodom offers him to keep the possessions. Avram refuses. He says, "I don't want people to say that you made me rich." He swears that he will not take any of the spoils. Hashem then reassures Avram that he should not be afraid. The kings will not retaliate against him, and he did not use up any of his reward. Avram asks, "What good is any reward if he is childless?" And Hashem promises Avram that his descendants will be as many as the stars in the sky. In the sixth aliyah, which is a very long aliyah, Avram asks Hashem for a sign how he will know that this will become true. And Hashem commands him to perform the Bris Bein Habasarim, which is a very enigmatic ceremony where they form a covenant by splitting animals in half, and each of the animals symbolize future karbonot. And then a very strong darkness overcomes Avram. He goes to sleep and he sees a vision that his children will be in exile. Hashem tells Avram that his descendants will be strangers in a land that is not theirs. They will suffer, but afterwards they will leave with great wealth, and that the 4th generation will inherit the land of Israel. But Avram personally will live a long life and die b'seva tova at a good old age. The aliyah continues. Sarah realizes it's been 10 years since Hashem gave them the promise of many children, and they still have not had a child together. So she takes her maidservant Hagar, who she acquired in Egypt, frees her, and gives her to Abraham to be a surrogate mother, so that it says, "Ulai ibane mimena," perhaps I will be built from her. Once Hagar falls pregnant, Vatekal gavrita be'eneha, her mistress becomes light in her eyes, and Sarah gets upset. Sarah afflicts Hagar and she escapes. When she's in the desert, she is told that she should go back to Sarah. That is her destiny, and she'll give birth to a son who is Ishmael, not the current son she's carrying, because she miscarried because Sarah mistreated her, but she'll have another child who will be Ishmael. He'll grow up to be a great nation. Meaning he'll be a wild man. He will be fighting against everyone, but everyone will need him, which pretty much sums up the Arab world today. When Avram is 86 years old, Ishmael is born. And then when he is 99, Hashem again appears to Avram and tells him to change his name to Avraham. In the last aliyah, Hashem commands Avram to perform a bris milah as a sign of a covenant between them. And from now on, all baby boys who will be born must be circumcised at 8 days. This is the covenant of the Jewish people between us and Hashem. And Hashem promises that Avram will have a child with Sarah, and Avram laughs with joy. And Sarah's name is now changed to Sarah. So at the end of the parasha, Avram gives himself and all the members of his household a bris. Now let's look at this parasha in a bit more detail. So in keeping with our theme, the world was created to be blessed, and people were created in order to be a blessing. How do we access the bracha that Hashem infused in the world? So the first two parashiyot were filled with mistakes and curses, and now we have Avram, who's introduced to us with the word bracha 5 times. The pasuk says, Ve'escha l'goy gadol, I will make you into a great nation, Ve'avarechacha, and I'll bless you, Ve'agadla shemecha, and I'll make your name great, Ve'heyer bracha, and you will be a blessing, and it carries on in the next pasuk, Ve'avarecha, mevarechacha, those who bless you will be blessed, Umakalelecha aor, and those who curse you will be cursed. And all the nations of the world will be blessed through you. So Rav Hirsch explains the Va'agadla Shemecha, will make your name great, is a wish. It's not a promise. I want to make your name great. Hashem can give us all the good things in the world, but it's up to us to achieve moral virtue. It's up to us to take these good things and turn them into true everlasting bracha. So when it says, Veheyeh bracha, it's a charge. It's not a blessing. Hashem wants Avram to become the light to the nations. So what he's saying to him is, please be a blessing. I'm going to give you children, the land of Israel, wealth. Take these things. Veheyeh bracha, become a bracha, so that v'nivrachu b'cha kol mishpachot ha'adama, all the nations of the world will be blessed from you. In other words, it's not what you have. It's what you do with it that ultimately becomes the real bracha. And this is what the stories of this week's parasha are teaching us. In the beginning of the parasha, Avram doesn't have any children. It says very definitively at the end of Parashat Noach that Sarah is a akara ein lavlad, that she has no physical, natural way of having children. Their nephew Lot seems to be their adopted son who is going to inherit them. For this reason, Lot is very prominent in the story. In the very beginning, in Pasuk Dalet, it says, Vayelech Avram, kasher dibrei elav Hashem, and Avram went, just like Hashem said, Vayelech ito Lot. Lot goes with him. Lot follows along as an equal on this mission. For all intents and purposes, Lot is Avram's successor. But we're going to read that although both of them start in the same place, they both react differently when they receive bracha. So in a sense, Lot is going to be the character foil of Avram. So we read, Vayikach Avram et Sarah ishto ve'et Lot b'no achiv ve'et kol ruchosham. In the beginning, it's Avram, Sarah, and Lot. That is the family. And we see two things. First of all, first come the people, then come the ruchosh, the property. But it's ruchosham. Lot shares in everything that Avraham has. They go to the land of Israel, which they've been promised. And there's a famine in the land. In fact, the Midrash Tanchuma says it was the worst famine in history. And they decide to go down to Egypt. They realize that Egypt was very immoral, and they realize that if Avram goes in as the husband, he's going to be killed straight away. So they came up with a plan. They would say that Avram's the brother, the legal guardian, and they are entertaining possible suitors. And whoever tries and asks for Sarah's hand, they'll just request a ridiculous dowry, and hopefully this way Sarah won't be taken by force because no one can afford her. What they didn't take into account was that the king would take her, because the king could afford any price that Avraham would demand, and sure enough, he showers Avram with cattle and servants and gold and silver, so that Avram becomes incredibly rich. But this wealth is at the cost of Sarah's dignity. She goes through a terrible ordeal, and even though they leave wealthy, it's with a bitter taste in their mouth. Not only that, but the wealth continues to affect the family in a negative way. When they go into the land of Israel, when they're leaving Haran, it says, Avram, Sarah, Ishto, Lot v'ruchosham. When they leave Egypt, Nechama Leibowitz notes there's a subtle change. Vayal Avram Mitzrayim. Avram comes up from Egypt. Hu v'ishto, he and his wife. V'chol asher lo, everything that's his. V'lot imo. So now Avram's possessions are coming between him and Lot, and it's no longer ruchosham, their property. It's asher lo, Why is it no longer Rechushim? Because we see Vagam Lot ha'olechet Avram, because also Lot, who goes with Avram, Hayat son of Akar. Lot is now independently wealthy. He's no longer a part of Avraham's enterprise. Not only that, how each of them handle their wealth is different. When Avram comes back to the land of Israel, it says, Avram was wealthy, and he went back to the Mizbeach and called in the name of Hashem. Then it says, Lot is wealthy, and you're waiting for it to say, and he called in the name of Hashem, but there's a silence. He's no longer following in Avraham's vision. He doesn't want to be part of this Lech Lecha, the wandering to find Hashem. He's happy with all his wealth, and that's all he's worried about. And this leads to the next split. We see the Pasuk says twice that they're not able lashevet yachdav, to dwell together. They have so much wealth that they can't dwell together. And they're different opinions. Some people say that Lot said, well, Avram has no descendants. The land has been promised to him, so it's mine, and I can take it now. Why'd I have to wait? And he let his sheep graze wherever they wanted. Whereas Avram said, no, this is for the future. The Knani Az Ba'aretz, they're still in the land. It would be immoral to just let your animals go wherever they want. A second opinion is there was still a drought. There wasn't a lot of fields for the animals to graze. So they want to split up the grazing area. And that's what Avram says to Lot. He says, go north or south because this is good grazing area. But Lot is no longer interested in being a shepherd. He is tired of wandering. Not only that, when he was in Egypt, his eyes were opened up to a new way of life. We said last week's parasha that the children of Shem are Ivrim, nomads. Lot is fed up with this nomadic life. He's been to Egypt and he's seen people settled in houses, living in affluence and stability. He wants this life. Not only that, it says he looks down and he sees the Jordan Valley and he describes it, Kegan Hashem, Ke'eretz Mitzrayim. What is the land of Egypt, the Garden of Eden, and the Jordan all have in common? They're all watered by a river. In contrast to the land of Israel that is dependent on rain, there is a constant supply of water in the Jordan before Sodom and Gomorrah were destroyed, and in Egypt, which means you don't have to rely on Hashem. You're not dependent on Hashem. You don't have to call out to Hashem all the time. You have consistency. You have stability. The downside of this fertility is when you have such an excess of land, such an excess of food, such an excess of people, then people are cheap. Land is cheap. And it actually leads to immorality. It leads to corruption. It leads to an undoing of society when there is an excess of wealth that is too easily acquired. And that's what it says, that the people of Sodom were wicked. They're extremely wicked, but this doesn't bother Lot. He's too enamored with his new wealth. And he departs from Avram. He goes to live there. And even after he's captured by the emperors of Mesopotamia and goes through that whole traumatic experience, even after Avram comes to rescue him at great personal cost to Avram's life, not only does Lot not come back and apologize for his choices, he doesn't even thank Avram. This split is absolute and final. There's no more reconciliation, and he doesn't have an heir. And that's why when he says to Hashem, who's going to inherit me because Lot is gone? And Hashem says to him, you don't need Lot. I'll give you new children. Avram challenges Hashem, and he says, how do I know, not that I'll have children, but the Mefarshim say, how do I know my children won't also become corrupted with the wealth, just like Lot was? And then they'll sin, and then they'll lose the bracha. And this is a real concern, because we even say in Shema, V'hayam Shemot will be, if we listen, Hashem will give us rain and produce. But then what will happen? Hisham Elochem, be very careful. Pen yiftel levavchem, in case your hearts turn, v'sartem v'avadetem elohim acharim, and you start worshipping other gods. It's a real concern that when you become affluent, you might throw off your responsibilities that Hashem has given you, right? So how can Hashem reassure Avram that his children will be worthy of the bracha? How can they take the bracha and become a bracha and not become corrupt? So what is Hashem's answer? Don't worry, your children will be strangers in a strange land. They'll be enslaved and oppressed. How is this a bracha? So what Hashem is telling Avram is he's saying, you're right. When bracha comes too quickly, it can lead to corruption, because the bracha in and of itself doesn't do anything. It's what we do with a bracha. And what does suffering do? Suffering allows us to develop ourselves so that when we receive the bracha, we have greater capacity to actualize that bracha into true greatness. And this is why the galus of Egypt was called the Kor HaBarzel, the refining furnace, because it was through this experience that the Jewish people had to work for their bracha. They didn't get it easily like Lot received it. They had to suffer for 210 years of proper working and a total of 400 years of being a stranger. And in fact, Egypt is a paradigm throughout Tanakh of easy bracha. It's symbolic of the good life. Eat, drink, be merry, don't worry so much about the future. And this is why the Nevi'im rail against Egypt. All the different Nevi'im keep saying, stop turning to Egypt. But we don't listen. And what happens? In the end, Israel rebels and we go into galus. And not any galus, but the four galiot that Avram saw in his vision. So this is how the Bris Ben HaBesharim is a real reassurance. The exile is going to be our struggle. And we see that through our 2,000 years of exile, as Rav Ken Spira argues, we have developed to a point where we have taught the world our values. We've shared the world the values of kindness, justice, value of life. The world has become enriched through the value of the Jewish people. And we have refined ourselves and developed ourselves throughout the galus. We have become better people so that one day when Mashiach comes and we come back to the land of Israel, we are now equipped to handle that bracha that Hashem gave Avram, that we will inherit the land, keep the land, and turn it to a bracha, not just for us, but for the whole world. So the takeaway from this week's parasha, the lesson that we can take for our personal lives, is not to be like Lot and look for the easy way out, but rather to embrace the challenges as they come and see them as opportunities for growth, not just growth, but as a way to prepare ourselves for the bracha that Hashem wants to give us, a way to ensure that when Hashem gives us all the good that He's planning for us, we'll use it in the best possible way, that it will perfect us, that it will actualize us, and that it'll turn us into a source of bracha, not only that we personally can enjoy, but that the whole world can enjoy. Have a wonderful week.